KQED.
This is the California Report. Good morning. I'm Lily Jamali. The recent multi-state E. coli outbreak that has had people tossing out romaine lettuce since Thanksgiving has been partially traced to a farm in Santa Barbara County. KCBX's Greta Mart reports.
The U.S. Food and Drug Administration and the Centers for Disease Control announced Thursday that their traceback investigation led them to Adam Brothers Family Farms, a vegetable grower in Santa Maria. The E. coli strain found on site was matched to the outbreak strain through genome sequencing. It's still unknown why the bacteria associated with animal waste was found at the farm. The FDA says the farm is cooperating fully. The Santa Barbara County Public Health Department says it's had no reported cases of illness connected to this outbreak. Even though investigators made a genetic match between samples taken on the farm and the strain that sickened 59 people, officials say it's likely not the only source. The FDA says it's possible additional romaine lettuce from other Central Coast farms could also be implicated in the outbreak. So the agency is still advising people to avoid eating romaine grown in Santa Barbara County. However, the FDA says romaine grown in San Luis Obispo, Santa Cruz, and Ventura counties is now safe as long as it was harvested after November 23rd. For the California Report, I'm Greta Mart in San Luis Obispo.
Mental health workers at Kaiser Permanente continue their fifth and final scheduled day of picketing today in what has been a week-long strike. Psychologists and social workers say their patients have to wait too long between therapy appointments. KQED's April Demboski has more.
Clinicians have been marching outside Kaiser hospitals all over the state this week. Riverside, LA, San Diego, and Fresno, up to Santa Rosa, Sacramento, and Oakland. While therapists protest overloaded patient rosters and understaffing, a former congressman joined some rallies to talk about the bigger picture.
Let's welcome Patrick Kennedy.
Patrick Kennedy is a nephew of JFK. He sponsored a Keystone mental health law passed in 2008 that he described as the medical sister of the Civil Rights Act his uncle signed in the 60s.
In mental health, we too receive separate and unequal treatment. And when someone has a mental health condition or an addiction, they feel as if they've got to go down the hall and drink from the colored water fountain.
Kennedy's law requires insurers to give patients with depression the same level of care as patients with cancer. But he says when people with mental illness and addiction get shortchanged, they don't fight back enough.
Because the nature of these illnesses keeps people quiet.
Kennedy called on California's Attorney General to investigate Kaiser and other insurers to make sure they're complying with mental health laws. For the California Report, I'm April Demboski.
Okay, could a Californian be our nation's next president?
I mean, anything's possible.
And that is Marisa Lagos, KQED's own politics reporter. Marisa, thanks for being here.
Always a pleasure.
Okay, so several Californians have been floated as possibilities. And I think they're enjoying the attention, frankly. Among them, U.S. Senator Kamala Harris, who has said she's going to decide over the holidays if she will run. Here she was at Spelman College in October.
You know, my mother used to tell me, she would tell my sister, my mother would look at me and she'd say, Kamala, you may be the first to do many things.
Does she have a shot?
I think as much as anybody has a shot. You know, Harris has really been seen as a rising star in the party for a while. I think that, you know, there are a lot of questions floating around about identity politics and is a black woman the right person to take on Trump? I think backers of hers would roll their eyes at that. Mm-hmm. I've watched her whole career. She was very much a prosecutor as DA and attorney general, very sort of cautious in her political approach in mm-hmm. California. Since she's become senator, that has changed dramatically. I mean, you saw her at the Kavanaugh hearings.
Right.
She was on fire, and she still brings a prosecutorial sort of vibe to the whole thing. But that speech we heard was her talking at Spelman College, which is a black women's university in Georgia. You know, she's been making a lot of visits to these early caucus and primaries. States. And I think that's one thing she's honing in on via Kavanaugh, via Spelman, is this idea of women being a core constituency and particularly women of color.
Another possible is Eric Garcetti, mayor of
Who?
L.A. Oh, I think of him because I grew up in L.A. in the 90s as Gil's kid. But he has made it clear that it's on his mind. Let's hear from him.
As I talk to folks, you know, they hunger for a better America. They hunger for an America that is decent, that is forward looking.
Sounding pretty presidential.
Yeah, and I mean, not a surprise coming from any big city Democratic mayor. But what's crazy is that, as you're saying, Garcetti is not super well known outside of L.A. You might even say inside L.A. It's not an uber political place. But he's been making the rounds to Iowa and New Hampshire and, you know, says he, too, will decide after the holidays. He's a great speaker. And I get the sense that in some ways he's more popular the places he's visited than mm-hmm. the place he's from.
He's 47. You know who's even younger?
I do. Have you heard of a man named Eric Swalwell?
Yeah, I feel like I've seen him a lot in the national media, like the last month or two.
This is a 38-year-old congressman from the East Bay here in the Bay Area.
Overachiever.
Overachiever.
I'm just saying that because I'm that age.
No, seriously. I mean, I know. He's like a year older than me. It's a little daunting. He ran a pretty sort of insurgent campaign when he was first elected to Congress, knocked out a congressman who had literally been in Congress since before Swalwell was born. He's part of the leadership team. Until this year, he was the youngest member of Pelosi's leadership team. He's really made hay over the Russia investigation, the Mueller investigation. As you said, he's all over the news.
Is he angling for something else, like maybe a cabinet post or just the opportunity to get in the national spotlight?
I mean, I will say Swalwell is from Iowa, so I think he saw an opportunity there that, like, he could be on the ground and really speak to Iowans. And the Democrats are about to get into, like, this WWE death match over the next year and a half. And I think that there's this sense that, like, you might as well throw your hat in the ring if you A, think you have a chance, or B, think it could just help you sort of burnish your credentials.
Marisa Lagos, host of Political Breakdown here on KQED. Thank you so much.
My pleasure.
And now to some news that'll have Oakland Raiders haters saying good riddance. The team's last game at the Coliseum could be a lot sooner than expected. KQED's Angela Corral reports.
The team, which is moving to Las Vegas, has been negotiating to play at the Oakland Coliseum until its new facility is ready, but abruptly pulled out of talks on Wednesday. Coliseum Authority Commissioner Chris Dobbins says that means this season would be the team's last.
The next game on the 24th of December, Christmas Eve, is going to be probably the last game, the last time the Raiders ever play in Oakland, so that's really sad.
Dobbins says he'd be happy to continue negotiating, but that's unlikely. The Raiders called off the talks a day after Oakland filed suit against the team in connection with its move to Vegas. Dobbins, who's also a lifelong fan, wishes things were different.
Obviously, as an Oakland guy, I want the Raiders to stay. I think they should stay. I think the fact they're leaving for the second time is abominable, but it's very frustrating.
The owners haven't said where they plan to play next season, but possibilities include sharing the 49ers stadium, going to San Diego, and going to Nevada early. Whatever happens needs to be fast because the NFL reportedly has to know by February in order to schedule next season's games. For the California Report, I'm Angela Corral.
Let's switch gears now. San Luis Obispo County employees went on strike for the first time ever this week. The county's largest union is protesting over wages and benefits. Public health clinics, records offices, and libraries were forced to close. KCBX's Tyler Pratt reports.
The San Luis Obispo County Employees Association represents about 1,700 people. They're upset with the 0.5% wage increase the county offered this year. The union wanted a 3% increase.
Insurance is up, the housing market is up, everything is up, food is up, gas is up, and our wage is down.
That's social worker Carrie Slater. She says she has to work a second job just to be able to live in San Luis Obispo County. Employees also say they can barely afford the county's health insurance plan.
I understand and sympathize with the frustrations that you feel.
That's Supervisor Adam Hill during the county board meeting earlier this week. The county says they couldn't give employees 3% this year because of decreased revenue and new projects like upgrading the jail. But employees like Ashley Clark say they don't feel valued.
We don't do what we do to get paid the big bucks, but we do what we do because we care about our community.
County officials have offered a 2% wage increase starting in July. The union hasn't accepted that offer in negotiations that have been going on for more than a year. And moving into 2019, employees say they are willing to strike again. For the California Report, I'm Tyler Pratt in San Luis Obispo.
Support for the California Report comes from the California Healthcare Foundation, helping low-income Californians get the healthcare they need. On the web at chcf.org. And Eric and Wendy Schmidt, whose Fund for Strategic Innovation supports transformative ideas that benefit humanity while protecting the natural world, recognizing through science the interdependence of all living systems.
For some who live in an area that's been hit by devastating wildfires, Ken Pimlott is a household name. He's headed Cal Fire for the last 8 years, but after 3 decades on the job, Pimlott is retiring today. KQED's Tara Seiler reports.
Chief Pimlott says there's no comparison between the wildfires he fought early in his career and those incinerating entire communities today. And he says there's no denying a main culprit.
Firefighters are facing the impacts of climate change every day. They're the indicators. They're the ones that are, you know, deployed for now months at a time.
California broke state records this year for having the largest, the most destructive, and the most deadly wildfires in the span of several months. Pimlott says Californians need to adjust and prepare for these massive fires because they're not going away.
So we need to treat things like red flag warnings very seriously. That can't become white noise.
He also suggests that perhaps government should consider making certain vulnerable areas off limits to development. Though with 40 million residents, he knows California needs more housing.
But we need to do it smartly, and we need to look at and learn from these fires as to, do we need to make improvements to building codes? Do we need to look at building construction? Do we need to look at placement?
And he says public notification systems need improving, especially since the kinds of fires we see today give people less time to get out of harm's way. Pimlott says he has no specific retirement plans. He's just looking forward to reconnecting with his family over the holidays after a very long and trying fire season. For the California Report, I'm Tara Seiler.
An ongoing preoccupation for those who lost it all in Butte County's Camp Fire is, where are they going to live now? Airbnb has a temporary fix in the form of a program called Open Homes. We started to tell you about it yesterday. Hosts offer their homes for free to people displaced by natural disasters. But in Butte County, after a month, the program ends today, even as temperatures have started to dip into the 30s. KQED's Polly Stryker has more on why.
The platform launched after the Camp Fire in Paradise and the Woolsey and Hill fires in Southern California, all of which displaced tens of thousands of people. Those affected could book a room for free for about 4 weeks. But as of today, survivors of the Camp Fire will no longer be able to book their own temporary accommodations using the Open Homes program. Kelly Bentz heads up Global Disaster Response and Relief at Airbnb.
Most people utilize it for a few nights to a few weeks, but we typically don't go over 4 weeks. The program doesn't actually end. It's the activation that ends. And what that means is people that want to host for $0 can actually still sign up through our Open Homes platform. You're actually able to do that every day of the year.
The Disaster Relief Housing Program will continue to connect Camp Fire survivors with hosts, but only through third-party vendors who vet and manage the cases, like FEMA and local governments' 211 shelter programs. For the California Report, I'm Polly Stryker.
And finally today, speed limits are going up in Los Angeles. That is so police can write more tickets. I know, it's confusing. KQED's Hope McKenney explains.
Los Angeles officials have faced a dilemma for years. Update speed limits or lose the ability to write most speeding tickets. This is due to a decades-old California law designed to protect drivers from speed traps by requiring cities to post speed limits that reflect the natural flow of traffic. If the signage is too old or doesn't reflect natural flows, the police can't use radar guns to catch speeders. So old speed signs equal fewer tickets and less money for the city of Los Angeles. In fact, ticketing has dropped by 77% in recent years. Now the city's updating its expired limits and signs by about 5 miles per hour on more than 100 miles of streets. So be careful to watch how fast you drive when you're in LA. For the California Report, I'm Hope McKenney.
And that's the California Report. Our engineers are Katie McMurrin, Danny Bringer, Rob Spate, Jim Bennett, Chris Hoff, and Seal Muller. I'm Lily Jamali. Have a great weekend.